Savior Jesus Christ. And I preached this same message this morning in New York, so this is twice today. Like I told Gary, I'm going to copy and paste, and we're going to use it again. So, and I am overcoming a cold, so if I sputter or if I cough or hack, I apologize ahead of time. So, from a mess to a message, that's what my title of my sermon is, and I got that from when I was at youth camp, and I was speaking to the kids at a campfire, and I said that, you know, as part of my message to them. So I said, you know what, I'm going to run with that, I'm going to bring it back, and we're going to tell it to you guys too. And so, we're going to go into the first slide here, and there's a map up here of the world, and things are messy all over the world. That actually is a map that highlights all the countries that have some kind of armed conflict taking place, whether it's wars or civil wars or insurgencies or drug wars. There's all over the place. You look at just all over the world, there's something going on where there are people trying to hurt each other, kill each other. And, you know, all the way around the globe. Look at Africa there. Africa is just, oh my goodness, it's quite the continent. Not a good place to be at the moment, you know, but even over in the Philippines there, and you know, there's all the places where we have brothers and sisters down in Mexico. There's a lot of places that are hurting right now. They're going through some things, you know, and all these I can list right there. You can see it for those that are here. You know, not only are these wars taking place and these conflicts, you know, there's a lot of other things that are going on. There's a lot of corruption and greed and lust and hate and starvation, and people are apathetic towards all of that. You know, that's not a great time necessarily to be living in. It doesn't make you want to get up in the morning and be like, go humans. You know, we're not feeling it. It's a mess. We made a mess of things. There's all this conflict and all this things going around, you know. And we look around and we can see things or not see things. You know, I used to see this. I used to see that. We don't do this anymore. We don't talk about these things anymore. And I hear this sometimes in our church. You know, I don't see the callings we used to see. I don't see the workings of the Spirit that I used to see. You know, we don't have these things that we used to have. And, you know, we can long for another time. We can look back. Be like, I remember when I used to see these things. I want to go back to that time. We used to do these things. I witnessed, you know, the Spirit in this manner do such and such. And we look back. We look back in time sometimes like, I wish I could go back. And I want to see those things again. And I want to hear those things again. I want to do those things. Experience things that used to happen. We don't see them anymore. You know, because this world it's a mess. You know, this is nothing that is new. If you look in our scriptures, I found a story. It's in Helaman, chapter 3, 1 through 5. And to set this stage, the book is named Helaman, but Helaman dies in the beginning, I think chapter 1 or 2. And so right now in the Helaman chapter 3, it's his son, whose name is Nephi. And Nephi, he is in the beginning of this chapter, he has gone to the Lamanites, and he has worked with them and labored with them, and he has tried to witness to them, and he's tried to prophesy to them, and it has failed him. And so he's actually been kicked out of the Lamanite country. In verse 2 it says, "And they did reject all his words, insomuch that he could not stay among them, but returned again unto the land of his nativity." So he comes back home after he's had this failed mission. And he's not able to convert anyone. He's not able to convince anyone. So he's probably not feeling the greatest. He went out to do a work that he was called to do by the Lord, and nothing comes of it. Gotta be kind of frustrating. But he comes home, and you know, he doesn't find much better. Look in verse 3, "And seeing the people in such a state of awful wickedness, and those Gadiat and robbers filling the judgment seats, having usurped the power and the authority of the land, laying aside the commandments of God, and not in the least aright before him, doing no justice unto the children of men, condemning the righteous because of their righteousness, letting the guilty and the wicked go unpunished because of their money." So he comes back. He has failed his mission. He has a failed government. And he is among a failing people. You know, that's a pretty big mess. He has tried to do what's right, and he seems, I'm sure he feels, very alone. Having had zero success in what he was doing, having come back home to see that, you know, there are thieves and robbers in the seats of power. They are, you know, condemning those that are righteous, you know, letting the wicked go free. And they're setting themselves up so they can continually do these things. You know, that's got to be pretty frustrating. You know, that's a big mess to be inside. If you go on, Helaman in the third chapter, I'm going to pull that up on my phone here, because I meant to pull that up earlier. My apologies. Helaman 3, and if you go to 6 to 9, he echoes something that I've heard before. Here we go. In verse 6, and he did exclaim in the agony of his soul, "Oh, that I could have had my days in the days when my father Nephi first came out of the land of Jerusalem, that I could have joyed with him in the promised land. Then were his people easy to be entreated, firm to keep the commandments of God, and slow to be led to do iniquity. And they were quick to hearken unto the words of the Lord. Yea, if my days could have been in those days, then would my soul have had joy in the righteousness of my brethren. But behold, I am consigned that these are my days, and that my soul shall be filled with sorrow because of the wickedness of my brethren." So here you have Nephi saying, you know, I wish I was born way back then. Back when I read, you know, all these amazing things, when they came across the ocean, when they were here, they would listen. He probably read about the stories about Ammon, he won't going into the land of Nephites and converting people, converting kings. You know, they suffered, but they had progress. You can read all about those things where his, you know, Alma came and, you know, came out of sin and converted, you know, many people, established the church. He's looking back at all these things that took place, and he's like, I want to go back to a better time. Back when the Spirit was strong. Back when there were miracles, and prophecies, and revelations. And I had all these things, and they were there. I have record of them. But I'm stuck here. I've heard people say before, you know, I wish I was born back in such and such a time. It would have been neat. And, you know, I watch this YouTube channel, and they have one of their little skits they do. It's called The Past Was the Worst. And they talk about all the things, you know, all the death that took place and all the hardships that people had to go through. And we kind of gloss over a lot of those things in the history books. You know, we look at all the accomplishments, and, you know, they did. They accomplished a lot. They did a lot. But, you know, it was at great cost most of the time. So, where does that leave us? You know, here we are in a mess, a messy world. We're consigned to what we have. We're born here. This is what we've got. We might be able to throw up our hands and be like, all right, Jesus, if you could just come back, you know, on your horse, with your sword and your armies, if you could make this all right, you know, just get rid of all this evil. I don't want to look at this. I don't want to deal with this. It's hard, it's harsh, it's cruel. These are not the things that I want to do. But I'm going to put it out that there's another way, right? Life can only be understood backwards, but it must be lived forwards. So we can look back in time, we can see things, we can understand how, you know, people act and how they react and what they do, but, you know, we've got to look forward. We can take the past, we can look and use it to make decisions about the future. And we can grow our faith. We can grow in prayer, grow in fasting. You know, and God can show us a way. And Alma in the 16th chapter, verse 169, "And thus it is, if ye will not nourish the word, looking forward with an eye of faith to the fruit thereof, ye can never pluck of the fruit of the tree of life." That's a pretty profound statement. You know, if we're looking backwards, and we're not growing our faith, we're not going to pluck of the tree of life. So that's a good warning that we all need to be to heed. You know, we can't fall into this trap of wanting to go back to a better time. You know, we were born in this time. We were born for a purpose. We were born here because God willed it so, for a reason. He wanted you and I here in this time and in this place. And we're commanded to take our faith, and we are commanded to look forward. If we want a taste of the tree, of the fruit of the tree of life, it's something that we need to do. So the question becomes, do you believe God can? So where is your faith? Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Who knows who those three are? Anybody know who those three are? There you go. Yeah, that's Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These were their Hebrew names. Right? They're only called that once in the book of Daniel, and then their names were changed when they were brought over to Babylon. And so these three, you know, they had a faith. And that faith was challenged. You know, they were looking forward. They couldn't go back to their homeland. They were prisoners, slaves. You know, they were captured, conquered people, taken from their homeland. They had no choice. They couldn't look back to when, you know, the temple sacrifices were taking place, when their country and their king ruled. They couldn't go back. They could have looked back and they could have said, hey, I wish I could go back. But they couldn't. So their faith was first tested when they were given food from the king. And they were said, hey, you guys have to go in. You're going to eat, and the king's going to come and examine you later on. And they gave him a portion of the king's meat. And they said, you know, we can't eat that. Probably because it contained pork. And they were like, we can't eat that. It goes against our beliefs. We're not allowed to eat that. So we're not going to eat it. So their steward that was in charge of them said, all right, well, here you go. We'll work out a deal. And they worked out a deal, and they ate a vegetable diet, it sounds like. And then they were more healthy looking and fuller looking. No, God blessed them because they put a little bit of faith out there. So it was a test of their faith. And that faith came through. God honored that, gave them blessing, and then they were elevated. And so then, as the story goes on, Nebuchadnezzar builds this large statue and golden statue of himself. And makes this commandment saying, all right, if you guys, everyone, that when they hear this music play, everyone has to stop what they're doing. They have to bow down to the statue. And they have to worship. And so, again, these three men, they made this decision. Like, well, where's our faith? What are we going to believe in? Are we going to believe in God? Are we going to believe in this idol? Are we going to fear God? Are we going to fear what man can do? And they'd made a decision. We are going to believe in our God. We're not going to worship this idol. And so the music came and played, and people saw that they didn't bow down. Now these three men had been elevated up to a position, and other men wanted that position. So these men came to the king and said, hey, they are not doing it. You got to follow through on your word. So the king brings them in. He's angry with them, and he asks them why they're not doing it. And they answer. If you look in Daniel in the third chapter, the 16th verse, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we are not careful to answer thee in this matter. If it so be that our God, whom we serve, is able to deliver us from the burning furnace, and he will deliver us out of thine hand, O king. But if not, be it known unto thee, O king, that we will not serve thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up. You know, they didn't know what was going to happen. They were willing to go. They said, my faith is in our God. And we might die. It's possible he could deliver us, but we're going to accept either outcome. Either one. And so that faith was tested. And those young men were thrown in. And they were unharmed. Not only that, there was another being in there, probably Christ was what it sounds like. He came in and visited them. And when they came out, you know, they didn't even have the smell of smoke on them. They weren't touched in the least bit by this fire. Why? You know, their faith was tested. Faith tested is faith that can be counted on. You know, they had tested their faith earlier on, and they knew that God would bless them. They didn't know how. They were willing to go to death. They were willing to be consigned to their fate. Either God's going to deliver us from the fire, or we're going to go and visit him this day. Win-win. That's how they looked at it. And that faith was tested, and now that faith can be counted on. They went on to profess their faith, and the king, Nebuchadnezzar, said, "You know what? Your God is the true one." Well, they were able to convert. They were able to make a king see, you know, what true power was. So 1 Peter 1:7, "The trial of your faith, being much more precious than of gold that perisheth, though it be tried with fire, might be found unto praise and honor and glory at the appearing of Jesus Christ." You know, trial of your faith, more precious than gold. When you look at gold on the elemental scale, you know, it says here gold perishes. You know, gold in real life, it doesn't actually perish. It doesn't bond with anything. It doesn't oxidize. It doesn't change. It's almost a useless chemical, really. When you look on the periodic table, it doesn't react with anything. You know, it's pure in its form. It lasts. It doesn't rub off, which is why we make coinage out of it for so long, you know, because it's going to be the same today, tomorrow. But, you know, a trial of our faith. You know, going through these trials, it's so much more precious than gold. Tried by fire, going through it, hard times, going through the mess, and hanging on to Christ, hanging on to our beliefs, that's what's precious. That's what's going to get us through to the end. That's what's going to get us to the end of the line where God says, "Come on in, good and faithful servant." That is what we're looking for. So we're going to go back to Nephi. We're going to finish up this story where Helaman, again in the third chapter, 10 to 31. So Helaman has this, he goes home and he gets into this tower. I don't know if that's his tower. I don't think that was his actual tower. It's just a tower I found out in Mexico, Mayan tower. But something similar to this, where he was up on top of it, in a public place somewhere by a road, I think is what it says. So he's up in this tower, and he is lamenting. And he's praying to God, "Why is this taking place? Why have I failed? Why have I gone, not converted anyone? Why is my homeland so corrupt?" And these people begin to hear him, and they gather. And they call other people, "Look, what's going on? This guy is up in a tower. He's making a ruckus." And so this crowd of onlookers grows, and Nephi looks up at some point, and he sees this crowd of people before him, and he says, "Okay, I'm going to preach to you too. You want to come listen to me? I'm going to talk to you. That's my commission in life." So he begins to talk to them, and he tells them, bears his soul out to all the crowd, tells them to repent, calls out the sins, calls out the judges, calls out the robbers. And he tells them, you know, he gives this prophecy, "If you don't change, you know, this city is going to be lost." So he does his job to a wicked people, calls them to a higher standard, and he's challenged. If we go on, these judges that are in this crowd, they are very upset. Of course, these are the ones that are profiting off of the justice system they have. So they begin to stir the crowd up. They say, "Hey, he's blaspheming our nation. He is telling you that you're weak when we are strong. He's telling you that you're unjust when we are just. He's telling you all these things. He's bringing you down. Look at our nation. It's so great. Our people are so strong. How do you let this guy do this thing?" They're trying to whip this crowd up with the intention that the crowd's going to grab him and bring him to the judges so that they can judge him. Because they don't want to lay their hands on him. They want other people to bring it to him. So they're trying to whip the crowd up. But then this argument arises. Now there are people on two sides. There are people telling, like, "Hey, Nephi's right. There are people who say, no, he's wrong. So the crowd is arguing. You know, here is this big mob arguing back and forth. Kind of sounds messy. But the end of that, Nephi is left alone because the judges see that, okay, there's two sides to this. We don't know who's going to take over, who's going to win, so we're not going to touch him for now. So that emboldens Nephi. And he continues to preach and prophesy. And he gives them a reminder. He tells them of all the laws that they have and all the revelations that they have. He tells them of all the prophecies that they've received. He talks to them and says, you know, these are the things that you know to be true. Verse 61 in chapter 3 of Helaman. Now, seeing ye know these things and cannot deny them, except ye shall lie. Therefore, in this ye have sinned, for ye have rejected all these things, notwithstanding so many evidences which ye have received. He says, you've got the truth. And you know what the truth is, and you are denying it. And you know you're guilty of these things. So he continues on, continues speaking to this crowd, and he gives this revelation. Verses 65 to 76, he tells them, your chief judge is murdered on the seat, on the judgment seat. And so as he tells them this revelation, they send five guys to go verify this, and those five men get there, and sure enough, they see there's the judge. He's lied down in the judgment seat. He's covered in blood, and he's dead. And so then these five, astonished at what they see, they pass out. They fall down. Which is kind of an odd reaction, but all five of them pass out. So then there's other people that weren't at the crowd. They come in, they see the dead judge, and these five people passed out, and they're like, ah, these five killed this guy, and God struck them down. So they take these five, and they put them in prison. So God gave Nephi this revelation, and now these people have taken this revelation, and they've arrested the witnesses to it, innocent men. So if Nephi had a social media account, he'd probably say, life update, we're still a mess here. This is not working out the way I want it to. Everything's still messy. These people have been given proof, facts. And they take it and they turn it around. And they arrest innocent men. So, they go to have the burial of the chief judge and the other judges in the land. They're coming together. And then the next set of verses, 76 to 89, the judges, they speak to these five men. They tell them, hey, were you in league? You know, they ask them the questions, were you working out with Nephi? Like, nope, it's as he said. And so after they speak to them, they realize, okay, there's nothing against these guys. We got to get them out. So then they turn around and they accuse Nephi. Hey, you were in league with someone. You manufactured this. You made it happen. You went with somebody and said, hey, go kill this guy, and then I can look like I'm a prophet. So they accuse him. Now they take him into custody. And so now, again, Nephi has done nothing but what the Lord has asked him to do, but hold to his faith. So his next update status is now we're a hot mess. Yeah, I've been arrested for doing what the God has asked me to do. And these people have turned it all around. They twisted everything, turned everything, changed it all. You know, I'm just sitting here, God, and I am giving what you've given me. So now Nephi is in prison. He's in custody. So we move on. Nephi then reveals who the true murderer is through God, giving him the revelation. He describes the evidence that they're going to find. They even come in and they offer him money and like, hey, if you just say you manufactured this, we're going to give you, we'll send you away. You're going to go free. Just say you did this out of your own, you know, thoughts and volition, and we'll let you go. And he says, no, I'm not doing that. And so he reveals them, all right, this is what has happened. And they go, they send people to the murderer, who was the brother of the chief judge, and they look at him and he's got blood on his clothing and they ask him about it. And sure enough, through their questions, they're able to prove this is the suspect. He's done it. So then they arrest the brother of the chief judge. And then again, these people have an argument. all this crowd that's gathered together. They're arguing. Some are arguing for that he is a prophet. He knows what he's talking about. He knows what he's doing. He's a man of God. And there's other people like, nope, that's not it. Something else. And then the crowd disperses. And Nephi walks home. No one's converted. No one's changed. Nothing's happened. No, we're still in a mess. And you got to think that Nephi is probably walking home going, what just happened? What is going on? Lord, I am giving you what you're supposed to have. I'm doing what you've asked me to do. And all these crazy, like, innocent men were arrested. I was arrested, you know. You gave me these revelations. And it's come to nothing. What kind of a mess am I in? What's going on? Fortunately, that's not where the story ends. We move on. The next part of the story, Nephi hears the Lord speaking to him. He comes to him and he tells him, your faith has been tested. And because your faith is tested, I'm going to give you power to make judgment on this people. If you say for there to be a famine, there's going to be a famine. If you say you want this temple brought down, it will be brought down. If you say you want earthquakes, if you whatever you want, because I can count on you. I've tested your faith and I can count on you. You and I are in accordance. Your will is in accordance with mine because your faith has been tested. You've held true to the word. You've held true to my doctrine. You've witnessed of me. If we hold true to our faith, we have promise. 1 Corinthians 2:9, but as it is written, eye hath not seen, nor ear heard, neither have entered into the heart of man the things which God hath prepared for them that love him. But God hath revealed them unto us by his Spirit, for the Spirit searcheth all things, yea, the deep things of God. And that's pretty deep if God comes to you and says, whatever you say is going to happen. Because you can count on a faith that's been tested. And so, from here, Nephi moves on. He's like, all right, let's go do it. So he goes back to the crowds. He goes back to the cities. He goes back to prophesying. And those evil people are still there. And they try to arrest him, and he is taken away. He's unable to be arrested. You know, but their hearts, still unchanged, still hard, still no repentance. And he goes about talking, preaching, prophesying, and nothing changes. So time goes on. We go now into the fourth chapter, and a war begins between the Nephites and the Lamanites. And this war is going on, and there's a lot of people that are getting killed, and it kind of pains Nephi to see this. He doesn't want to see his people destroyed, doesn't want to see his land overrun. And so he requests, God, can I have put a famine on this people? And so this famine comes, and the Lord ceases to bring rain on the land, and the crops don't grow when it's supposed to. And that naturally stops the war, because no one has anything to eat anymore. And this famine goes on for a while. And it says there that, you know, the more wicked part of the people ended up dying. And people start to realize, okay, something's going on. Maybe we should listen to this guy, Nephi, who's been telling us about these things. Maybe we should make some corrections. And so they begin. They begin to repent. And they begin to clean house. And they remove those evil judges. It says they removed all the Gadianton robbers. They took them all out. They were all gone. Removed every single one of them. So then the new judges, they come to Nephi. Like, can you please request that this famine stop? We've made repentance. We've realized our mistakes. We've understood the error of our ways. And so Helaman 4, verse 12, and it came to pass that when Nephi saw that the people had repented and had humbled themselves in sackcloth, he cried again to the Lord, saying, O Lord, behold, this people repenteth. And he calls on the Lord. He says, I need you to take away this famine. You skip down to verse 20. It came to pass in the 76th year, the Lord did turn away his anger from the people and cause that rain should fall upon the earth, insomuch that it did bring forth her fruit in the season of her fruit. So things are restored. And this famine goes away, just as God told Helaman, whatever you say, I'll make happen. But verse 22, and behold, the people did rejoice and glorify God, and the whole face of the land was filled with rejoicing. And they did no more seek to destroy Nephi, but they did esteem him as a great prophet and a man of God, having great power and authority given him unto God. And what a mess. You know, but at this moment, he was glad to be living in his time. Happy to see those that were living in sin converted. Happy to see that those that were put up in power so that they could do what they wanted, so they could continue to live in sin and foment sin and corruption, they were removed. And what a great miracle. He would never have seen that in his time. In those times that he wished he was in, he wouldn't have found that. How much greater of a miracle did he witness and become a part of? Because he lived in his time. Because he exhibited faith to those around him. He exhibited a good example. He did what God asked of him to do, even in the face of adversity. Even when it wasn't fun. Even when his livelihood was being threatened. His freedom was being taken. He stuck to his faith. And God was able to turn these things around. The quote I found is, only God can turn a mess into a message, a test into a testimony, a trial into a triumph, a victim into a victor. You know, no matter what your odds are, no matter what your station is, no matter where you find yourself, your exhibition of faith is more powerful than anything that we can conceive of. You know, we can be faced with insurmountable odds. And if we exhibit faith, it can be turned around. You know, there have been stories in the Bible over and over again, stories in the Book of Mormon over and over again, where these small band of people surrounded, getting ready to be destroyed, and they had faith, and they called upon God, and they conquered. Odds that were not in their favor, and yet they exhibited faith. It's like those three in the Old Testament in Daniel. You know, they had no power over that situation, but they just exhibited faith. And it is no different for us today. We but exhibit our faith, even in it's not paying off, when it's not convenient, when things aren't happening the way we want to, we exhibit faith and we get brought down. We exhibit faith and it doesn't work out. We suffer defeat after defeat. You know, the trial of your faith. The promise is that Christ will one day come. And he'll give you reward for your faith. Turn anything around. Take any mess that you're in, no matter what the details are, how outnumbered you are, how beat down you are, how sick you are, turn it into a message for someone. Those are my thoughts that I have for this evening. I pray that you have found some hope, Pray that you have found a message in here. Whatever may be taking place in your life, that, you know, God, through your faith, is able to turn it around. Thank you again for your time.